Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we're here with you. We begin by asking, is school safe? Now, it's a question we ask in the aftermath of deadly school shootings. It's a question we ask throughout much of 2020 as schools, teachers, and caregivers try to teach while battling a global pandemic of a deadly disease for which we had no cure and no vaccine. But last year brought hope for so many as safe, effective, free vaccines became available. First for the teachers, then for the middle and high schools, and finally, last year, for the youngest elementary school kids. Now, most of us thought we were going to be entering 2022 with students in seats and teachers in classrooms. But when the highly contagious Omicron variant exploded into American towns and cities, sending infection rates to record heights, it changed everything. And here's what some of you told us about the disruption you're living with at this moment.
Marissa, Staten Island, New York. It is a hot mess. Our school district is open. The new New York City mayor is adamantly opposed to shutting it down. And my kid's been in school 4 days and already has his third exposure since school started.
Hi, this is Kira from St. John's, Florida. Yes, our school is in person and there are no safety protocols for COVID right now. Masks are completely optional. There's no vaccine requirements. There's no social distancing as our schools are too overcrowded.
My children go to Byron, Minnesota schools. They are not mandated to wear masks. It's hard to ask your children to wear masks when other kids aren't expected to wear masks.
Hi there, this is Bonnie, Parker, Colorado. And unfortunately, the school district I am a teacher in has pretty much no protections for us from COVID. Masking is not required. As long as students test negative, even if they've been directly exposed, they are allowed to come into school.
Hi, this is Lisa from St. Louis. I'm a sixth grade teacher in a large school district in St. Louis, and we are 20% of our teachers at least are out right now. Bus drivers all called out today. I foresee some virtual action in our future.
We're always so grateful to those of you who call in and share with us your stories at 877-869-8253. That is the way to do it. Now, clearly, school disruptions are occurring across the country. But in Chicago, the situation became particularly troubling last week. After 2 days of in-person learning, the Chicago Teachers Union voted last Tuesday to pivot to remote learning. And to the frustration of many parents, that decision wasn't announced until about 11 o'clock at night on Tuesday. And because the Chicago school district leaders want classes to remain in person this year, school was canceled altogether Wednesday through Friday of last week. And that left many parents in a bind.
This week has been extremely frustrating.
Our producer spoke with Vanessa Chavez, who has three children in Chicago Public Schools.
Having multiple kids at home when, you know, they've lived through this once before and, you know, want to be back in school. My kids are all vaccinated. You know, we follow all mitigation standards, even outside of school. And so, you know, we're frustrated. We're very, very frustrated.
Vanessa said her frustration goes all the way back to the Chicago Teachers Union strike in 2019.
I started looking at it and listening to all of the facts and all of the different viewpoints and, you know, trying to look at all sides of a story. You know, I've slowly over the years have become more and more angry towards the Chicago Teachers Union, whether it's political posturing or just wanting to pick a fight at all times. It's really frustrating to know that, you know, our kids and a whole generation of children are being, you know, held hostage and being held back.
And she doesn't think the school district is doing enough.
I think this is something that has been going on over the years. And had they probably stood a little firmer in the past, maybe we wouldn't be at the point that we are now. I feel that the Chicago Teachers Union is essentially a bully to CPS, to CPS families. even to their own members. And, you know, when you don't put a stop to the bullying, it just gets worse and worse and worse until somebody actually stands up to them. And I feel like a lot of the parents in the Chicago area are now starting to realize that they're going to be the ones that are going to have to be the adult in this whole relationship and actually stand up to the bully.
Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot has positioned herself in clear opposition to the teachers' union decision to move to virtual learning. On Saturday afternoon, Mayor Lightfoot tweeted at the Chicago Teacher Union local, writing, "You're not listening. The best, safest place for kids to be is in school. Students need to be back in person as soon as possible, and that's what parents want. That's what the science supports. We will not relent." But the teachers' union describes the mayor's position as
dangerous. It is incompetent. It is unconscionable. I don't know how you recover from knowing that your boss refused to implement mitigations that were offered to her by the governor. How do you reconcile something like that?
That's Stacey Davis Gates, vice president of the Chicago Teachers Union, who spoke with The Takeaway on Friday. Gates was referring to a story that reporter Rich Miller broke last week, indicating that the Illinois governor had offered the city of Chicago additional tests and masks to help the school system, but that so far the city, which would actually have to pay for it, has not accepted. Asked to respond to parents like Vanessa Chavez, who view the union as a bully, Gates told The Takeaway she has some issues with how conversations about public schools often talk about parents and union members as though they're two entirely separate entities.
I have a seventh grader, I have a fifth grader, and I have a second grader. Parents do not have the market cornered on love and care for their children. In fact, the only reason why I sent my children back to school in August is because I trusted that the school community would keep them safe.
Here's how one teacher told us he feels about the current messy situation.
Hey, this is Nick in Chicago. I'm a CPS teacher. The feeling that I get is it's like I'm in the car and the parents are in the front seat arguing and fighting over where to go to dinner until finally someone blows up and loses their temper. And now we're not going anywhere and we're just driving in silence.
Nader Issa is a reporter covering education for the Chicago Sun-Times. Welcome to The Takeaway, Nader.
Thanks for having me.
Has there been progress over the course of the weekend in terms of discussions between the school district and the teachers union?
Yeah, so they negotiated late into Sunday night. The mayor even held off on canceling classes for Monday in case there was enough progress in negotiations. The teachers union held a meeting with its 25,000 members, but its union leaders didn't actually go to the meeting because they were still at the negotiating table. And so all signs point to progress being made. It's always a good sign when they're negotiating into the night. But obviously there wasn't enough progress because schools were canceled again on Monday for the fourth consecutive school day.
What are the big sticking points at this moment?
One is testing, and two is sort of this temporary return to remote learning for a few days. On testing, the teachers union had wanted every single student and staff member tested before they returned from winter break. They've since dropped that demand. They dropped it in their latest proposal made on Saturday. The remaining testing demand is for a switch to an opt-out program rather than opt-in. And what that is, a lot of districts around the country, around Illinois, in the suburbs of Chicago have used this. Basically, students would be defaulted into the testing program. Students are automatically enrolled, their parents are notified, and they can opt out if they want to. The way that the district has been doing it all school year is opt-in, where no students are defaulted into testing and parents have to go in, fill out a form, give their affirmative consent, and register their students for testing. That at Chicago Public Schools and other districts has led to way lower participation rates among students. The district started out the school year with only about 3% of students registered. It's now up closer to 20%, but nowhere near the number that the teachers want to be tested weekly, or at least semi-regularly.
That is actually the central insight of behavioral economics. You know, we know this from the book Nudge, right? That if you want mass participation, you actually have to kind of drop those barriers. And often sort of that opt-in process is, even if it's a small barrier, it's nonetheless a barrier. I just want to be sure that I'm clear about one thing. Who is it that's being tested here? Are these students who are returning after being observed for potentially being exposed? Or is this sort of just a regular process of testing over the course of the semester, whether they're asymptomatic or not?
Yeah, so there's two types of testing. One is if you're feeling sick, if you think you have COVID, you were exposed, you go get tested. That's sort of the test that all of us think about when we think of COVID testing. This other form of testing that we're talking about is called screening testing. It's asymptomatic testing. Everyone who signs up just gets tested regularly. And it's sort of just to detect asymptomatic spread in the school district before people start feeling sick. Maybe they start shedding virus, you test positive, and you can get those people isolated so that they're not spreading to classmates or to teachers or whoever it may be.
Now, I'm wondering, before this moment, what the relationship with the mayor has been like with the teachers union, particularly across the past year and a half of COVID and the great pivot and all of that. Sort of, is this a relationship built basically on trust and mutual respect, or has it been more tense?
I would not say there has been trust or mutual respect in this relationship. And it's really dated back, you can say, a decade. In the past 27 months, this is a third labor dispute. The teachers went on strike in 2019, and that was pre-pandemic, right before the pandemic. It was the fall of 2019, and that was more about pay and benefits were certainly on the table, but it was also about the teachers wanting more nurses in schools, more social workers, lower class sizes, sort of the bread and butter education issues. Then when the pandemic started, obviously, there was remote learning. Mayor Lori Lightfoot wanted to get kids back into classrooms and during the 2020-2021 school year. And so January 2021, this time last year, there was a big dispute around reopening negotiations. The mayor tried to reopen schools. The teachers voted, said, no, we're teaching remotely. She locked them out. It was a very similar situation to what's happening right now. And then of course, right now, Chicago doesn't have any type of classes, remote or in person. And back in 2012, the teachers went on their first strike in 25 years here in Chicago under Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And the situation just hasn't improved. At the time, the teachers union started negotiating common good bargaining. And so they started negotiating about these sort of wraparound issues, these support issues that affect students, affect working conditions, that have nothing to do with pay and benefits. This year and last year, it's about health and safety.
In a recent volley in this struggle, Chicago Tribune reporter Gregory Pratt tweeted on Sunday morning, quote, another small note from City Hall. As Mayor Lightfoot remains in a dispute with the CTU over CPS remote learning and reopening, her chief of staff quietly extended work from home for the mayor's office staff for at least another week. And Nader, I want to come to this point about the mayor's staff, you know, working remotely. You know, I'm a teacher during the parts of the day when I'm not on the radio. I'm a college professor. And I remember at the start of all of this, we were told, be ready to pivot at any moment, right? Not just in the next few weeks, but for the next several years. So I guess my big question is, why weren't the Chicago Public Schools ready to pivot if necessary? I don't think teachers are saying at this point they want to cancel the semester. They're talking about sort of waiting out the surge. Why isn't there kind of a process in place for exactly what we expected to happen with a, you know, with this pandemic?
I think that's the big question. And the answer sort of lies in this ideological argument that the mayor has been making. If you listen to any of her press conferences over the past week, really any press conferences over the past year, Mayor Lightfoot has been just adamantly opposed to remote learning. She says it's been a bad thing for students who are economically disadvantaged, who are Black and brown, all of which are the majority of Chicago public school students. She says mental health has hurt, academic achievement and gaps have widened. And so it's an ideological argument. But if you listen to the teachers, right, nobody's saying, hey, let's be out for 2 months or 3 months. They've set a date. They want to go back January 18th, next Tuesday, after the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, just to ride out the surge. And for some context, you mentioned the Omicron wave. Chicago right now is in the middle of a record wave. There's the most number of cases, hospitalizations, positivity rate. Every metric is at or near a record high. And so it's really about riding out this wave, getting people tested so that they're not spreading COVID, or at least exposing others to COVID in schools. And the response has been, well, remote learning is bad. And you ask any teacher, I mean, I'm in touch with teachers, even principals. Nobody wants to do remote learning. Nobody thinks it was fun. Nobody prefers to be in remote learning, but it's about being home and apart from each other while there's a surge. Just yesterday, the Chicago Public Health Commissioner, Dr. Allison Arready, she was on a town hall that was sort of put together at the last minute with some parents. And she said, if this was pre-vaccine days, Chicago schools would be remote right now. She thinks the vaccine, the fact that the vaccine exists and is this other layer of protection, makes it okay for schools to be open. I think one issue with that argument is that there was a report in Chalkbeat a couple of days ago. They secured through a public record search vaccine rates per school. And there are some schools with just very, very, very low vaccine rates. And overall, younger students at Chicago Public Schools are about a fifth vaccinated. Older students, 12 to 17, are about 60% vaccinated. And so the vaccine does help. It's another layer, if you've seen that sort of Swiss cheese model of each layer sort of protecting from the virus and building on each other. It's another one of those Swiss cheese slices. But it's the public health expert is saying it's enough. It's I don't know, the anxiety among parents and students and staff is enough right now that it's leading to what we're seeing now.
You know, your point about this being ideological is an interesting one. I mean, on the one hand, the mayor is not being exclusively ideological. We did see important learning loss, mental health questions as a result of the extended process of virtual learning. But when you point to the low vaccination rates among young people in the schools, I suppose I'm wondering, is that driven by sort of ideological and partisan concerns, or is it your sense that this is an access problem? I have to say, those are really quite low numbers, particularly for the youngest students.
I don't think it's about politics in Chicago. I think the issue one is, I think there are a lot of issues. One of them is mistrust. People maybe just don't trust the vaccine yet, or sort of learning more as the vaccine, as time goes on. I think another issue is access. Now, there are some schools that have held sort of vaccine clinics. The district overall throughout the city has held a few hundred vaccine events since the fall. And Chicago has even had incentives. You can get a $100 Amazon gift card if you get vaccinated at a city site. But there are some communities where there's no place to get vaccinated within a mile of your home. And so it's a little bit of traveling. But in terms of kids, I mean, I think a lot of the issue is parents wanting to wait and see, and the messaging might not be there, even though the district's holding these vaccine events. We see another district like LA, for example, they're holding vaccine events, but they also mandated the vaccine, and that mandate doesn't kick in now until the fall. They delayed it, but their vaccination rates are much, much, much higher. The majority of students are vaccinated at this point. So I think part of the issue may be messaging, getting people that parents trust to explain to them the benefits of the vaccine. And at some point, maybe looking toward moving toward a mandate, just like more than a dozen other vaccines are mandated for Illinois students.
I'm wondering the extent to which what we are seeing in Chicago, and less here about the Omicron surge and more about the tensions between city leadership and the union, are you expecting to see these tensions flare up over the course of this, you know, what is undoubtedly going to be a tough winter in other cities? Or will the challenges that are occurring in Chicago maybe incentivize city leaders and union leaders to come to solutions before we get to this closing school for many days point?
So I think the moves that the Chicago Teachers Union makes and has made over the past few years have definitely spread to other cities. If you look at reopening negotiations last year, the CTU was one of the first teachers unions to raise a big fight, start a big fight with its district over the learning conditions, the teaching conditions, the classroom conditions that the district was offering. And you started to see other unions across the country start to implement some of the same arguments and sort of pointing out failures or holes in districts' plans. I think we're already starting to see some of the same worries spread to other districts. You saw a couple of days ago, a group of Oakland students started a petition calling on its district to implement testing, more testing to provide KN95 masks, or else the students said they would go on strike. And you've seen a few other districts with teachers unions raising some points. I don't think this exact acrimony will spread to other districts. What we've seen when the Chicago teachers unions points spread across the country to other unions is they're generally, I mean, there might be some fighting, but they're generally able to work out agreements. In Chicago, the relationship is just so bad between the union and the mayor's office, from Rahm Emanuel and now to Mayor Lori Lightfoot, that I don't think the trust is there. Their disagreements spread to other cities, but then those cities get deals, and Chicago sort of drags on its situation. The other issue now is there's a mayoral election in about a year, and the mayor has viewed the Chicago Teachers Union as an opponent since day one, because they endorsed her opponent in the 2019 election. She's brought that up repeatedly, and she's expecting them to run a candidate against her about a year from now, with campaigning starting toward the end of this year. And so, no, this relationship isn't getting better. There's no chance. I don't think it gets better if it hasn't at this point.
Chicago, it is not a boring place to be an education reporter. Nader Issa is a reporter covering education for the Chicago Sun-Times. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.